of land, premium real estate in the Denton area that she wanted to donate for a good cause. She started with 73 acres that she wanted to donate for, quote, a good cause. She wanted to do something beautiful with it and serve others. And she felt a burden that, you know, God had put a burden of stewardship on her to do something good with this land that she had inherited. And so we do know Alan Graham, who's the founder of Mobile Loaves and Fishes in Austin, Texas. And Mobile Loaves and Fishes was founded over 27 years ago. 10 years ago, they started a village called Community First Village in Austin. They've lifted over 450 chronically homeless individuals off the street and given them the supportive services they need to transform their lives. They're now expanding, and they'll be able to house up to, I think, right at 2,000. So it's a huge success. They've been on 60 Minutes, the Today Show, and the founder was interviewed on Joe Rogan. They've been in the New York Times and that kind of thing. So we've known Alan for 12, 15 years, and we've got a very good friend that serves on their board. And so when this lady said that she wanted to donate this land to do something beautiful with, we decided to ask her if she wanted to go take a look at Community First as a possibility, and which we did. She decided that's what she wanted to happen on her 73 acres, which is her homestead where she grew up, and it's a gorgeous piece of land in Denton. And so modeling after Community First Village, which, you know, we have a relationship there, would have been the idea. And our benefactor said she wanted to do that. She had no idea how to do that, how to get it started. And as a serial entrepreneur that, you know, maybe has lost my mind a time or two, I volunteered to spearhead a search committee to find the team to make it happen. I tell everybody that was at lunch in Austin when we took her down to see Community First Village, and that's where God tricked me into it. I say that jokingly. It's a blessing to be able to serve. But that's kind of how it came together. She donated the 73 acres. She wants the village to be on the 73 acres. Subsequent to that, she donated an additional 200 acres, stated it could be used however as a funding mechanism or for additional village or what have you. So we've got a good bit of land, and we're working on a plan development that we're trying to get approved through the city of Denton right now to construct the village on the 70 acre.
So right now, those 73 acres are just nothing on it. Is it in, can you give us the approximate location or whereabouts in Denton County is it?
Yeah, it's up in the northwest part of the city. It's one of the newer annexed pieces of dirt in the city of Denton, near 288 and 35, just west of 35. And, so there, as I mentioned, it's her homestead. So there's a couple of homes on the property, and there's several barns.
Okay.
And her family were farmers. The name of our organization is the 1877 Journey. That's the 501c3 that we've gotten approved. We're a nonprofit. And the reason we named it the 1877 Journey is her family started buying land in Denton in 1877. Mm. So we feel like the journey started in 1877 and continues with this mission.
The website for Community Forever Village is communityforever.org. My guest, president, CEO, founder, Pete Moggins. And so where are you now? You've got the land, and obviously this is a huge undertaking, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
You got to get a lot of people involved. And so what's going on right now as we speak?
Yeah, so what we need is a plan development, which is going to require a zoning change on the 73 acres. And we've been working with the city. It's been quite some time now, but we've got a lot of challenges up in that area with utilities. You know, when a developer comes in, and I'm not a developer by trade, but I'm willing to try anything once, and I've hired consultants to come in alongside me that are developers to guide me through or help guide us as a board through the process. So we've been working on that for a number of years. There are a number of challenges in the area, just, you know, making it, whether it's feasible or not to construct. And that's mostly utilities, water, wastewater, and these kind of things. So we've been working on solutions for that, and then we're back and forth with the city on what the rules will be for the plan development, you know, what we can build, how we can build, and, you know, to what standards of construction and all these kind of things. So we're working through that. I feel like we're getting very close on that. I think we're within, 3 to 6 months of getting approval on that, and then we'll move forward with actual civil engineering so that we can get underway with construction, and that'd probably be within the next year to year and a half.
The good thing, I guess, about this is that you do have a model. You're not just blindly doing this.
Correct.
And Community First Village, is that pretty much a replication of what you would like, or are there some things that you'd say, well, yeah, I want to do this, but I think I'll do it a little bit differently? Is that a pretty much you want to do it exactly how they're doing, or how close would it look to that?
Well, yeah, we want to replicate Community First, but I think, Alan Graham and the leadership at Community First would tell you that they're a work in progress as they go. I mean, as God leads them, they take new direction even today. And so there are things that they're learning, but certainly there's a lot that they have learned that we can learn from, that we don't want to do, things that we do want to do. And there's some things that we might want to do a little bit differently, just because it's Denton and it's not Austin, the weather's a little bit different and that kind of thing. But we do want to model after Community First. It's different, as you and I have talked about, it's different than what most people may envision when they think about initiatives that are taking place in the homelessness space. When you talk about bringing people off the street into housing, that conjures up thoughts for a lot of people that I talk to of homelessness shelters like they see downtown, where there's, maybe it doesn't look in the best condition and there's, loitering out front and these kind of things. It's not that at all. Community First Village has proven to be transformative. Okay, so the first person that first chronically homeless individual that ever moved into Community First Village still lives there. So it's not temporary housing to transition back into normal society, or however you want to term that, how people might term that. This is for individuals that frankly they are struggling with trauma issues, or they may have mental issues, drug addiction. There's different, reasons why they might be chronically homeless and living on the street. If someone is chronically homeless, that means they've been on the street for at least 12 months. And just living on the street for 12 months, my understanding is the trauma that causes really leaves you in a condition where it's difficult without some help to pick yourself up by your own bootstraps and just make life happen, mm-hmm. Because you've got potentially cognitive disabilities and, these kind of things where keeping a budget and paying rent and keeping a job, holding it down, all those kind of things become a significant challenge without significant help, right? So the village surrounds these individuals, our chronically homeless neighbors, with the supportive services that they need, medical facilities, counseling facilities, addiction recovery, grocery store and everything else. It'll be, for lack of a better way of putting it, all-inclusive village, mm-hmm. for them to live, and it's permanent housing. People that have experienced trauma, part of the trauma they experience is constant displacement. If you find yourself homeless, you're sleeping on a curb one night, you get kicked off that, you're under a bridge the next night, you're on the front step of a business the next, and you're constantly being displaced, which causes trauma. So it's permanent housing because it needs to be for our chronically homeless neighbors to understand that they're being loved back into a way of life, not just, pass from one situation to another. But I do ramble, as we talked about before we got started, but you'd ask me about Community First. We do want to replicate Community First as closely as possible with some improvements where we see, that improvements can be made, and they constantly tell us that kind of thing as well. I will say that, in my vision, when you look at the homelessness space, there's kind of four different categories. And there are a lot of homelessness initiatives that operate in one of these categories without going into the next. So the first category, as I see it, is life-saving. And you got to realize that our neighbors that are experiencing homelessness, if they're living on the street, they're in mortal danger. So the life expectancy of our neighbors that are experiencing homelessness is not good. It's a very dangerous situation for them. So the first, kind of thing that needs to happen is life-saving. Pull them out of a dangerous situation and get them into housing. The second element—
Can you mind if I ask a follow-up question on that? Is there any kind of study about how willing these folks are to be displaced? Because I think, you know, it's not like, hey, you want to go to this community? I can imagine some of them just saying, for whatever reason, maybe due to mental illness, no, I don't want to go. Do most of them say, oh, yes, thank you, I want to get out of here? How willing are most people to be taken from where they are into something even that's, objectively speaking, a better lifestyle?
Well, when you say how willing, you know, or is there a study? I'm not aware of a study.
Okay.
Anecdotally,
maybe.
Yeah, I will say there are some that are resistant to it. I mean, I have interviewed quite a number of missionals that live in Community First Village. And the missionals are people that are not formally homeless, but have chosen to live a sacrificial life and live in the village to minister to the formerly chronically homeless individuals that live there. So I've interviewed a number of those, and there are individuals living on the streets, our neighbors that are living on the streets, that are resistant to help because they're, you know, this fear of displacement and, you know, concern of incarceration, and they become, you know, kind of jaded, and they fear authority and these kind of things. So there's some of that. I don't know how widespread that is, but it is a situation where, you know, we have to approach these individuals in a ministry capacity where we let them know they're not being judged, there's nothing to fear, that we love them and we want to help them.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that was number one. And then what are the other ones?
So secondly is life sustaining. So if you sustain life, and this would be like government housing or some other form of affordable housing where they're in a place with a roof over their head for a sustained period of time. So they're off the street, they're out of that place of danger, so their life's been saved, and then you know, their life can be sustained over a period of time by staying in a safe place. And then the third area of service is life empowerment. And these are organizations that, you know, may give job training and are, you know, home economics type training and education of all sorts for people to be able to empower their lives, these neighbors of ours that are chronically homeless, to be able to empower their lives to, you know, improve themselves, get a better job or these kind of things, or to get a job in the first place. And then the fourth area is life transformation. And so I see us crossing all four of these categories. I mean, it is important that we get these individuals that are in danger of their life off the street into a place of safety, sustain them with permanent housing so they have a roof over their head ongoing. We want to provide the supportive services where we give them dignified work opportunities for a job, even in the village, or job training and what have you, to be able to get a job outside the village. But mostly we want to create an environment within the village that is not chaotic. It is peaceful and loving, and it is an environment that invites the Holy Spirit in to transform lives so that these individuals, that our neighbors that are experiencing homelessness, that need the love of Christ, as we know, that we can love them into that. We don't want to preach them into it. We want to love them just through love and not being judgmental on what decisions they may or may not have made over their life, not judging how they got in the situation that they got in, just realizing that we have a neighbor that's in desperate need. And because Christ has called us to do so, we want to love that individual, and we want to, through the power of the Holy Spirit, express the love of Christ in the way that we minister to them, not in the way that we talk or preach to them, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So this environment that we want to create in the village, not only would it have medical facilities and counseling and addiction recovery and all the rest of it, it would have a huge spiritual component so that these individuals could find relationship with God and begin to walk with Christ. And when you, there's a lot of studies that show you know, volunteering, say, just on a, you know, on a secular level, volunteering actually helps raise the mood and, you know, improves your kind of your self-satisfaction, say, where you're, where you've got, I can't think of the word that I'm looking for, but yourself is improved.
You dignity have more, or?
Yeah, well, higher yeah. dignity, and you have, I can't think of the word that I'm looking for, but in volunteering and giving back, there's evidence that improves your self-esteem. So maybe self-esteem is what I'm looking for. Well, the reality is that we know that if you come to relationship with Christ and begin to walk with Christ and then start to give back, that that's just multiplied. Mm-hmm. And so there's life transformation that takes place. And what's happened at Community First Village is individuals have started giving back. The first individual that moved into Community First still lives there. And he now volunteers and gives back to the others that are coming into the village that need help. And so that life transformation for him has been overwhelming, you know, if you speak to him about that.
Pete Moggins is my guest, president, CEO, founder of Community Forever Village, and the website communityforever.org, communityforever.org, Christian ministry serving the chronically homeless in Denton County with permanent housing and supportive services that allow them to reclaim their dignity and live with purpose. Now, I can see some people saying, you know, Pete, I think these people that live there ought to have a little skin in the game. Are they going to be kind of giving any kind of financial contribution? It doesn't sound like what you're saying, that this is a let's rehab them and then get them out into the real world,
right,
so to speak.
Right.
This is, you gave the example about the guy who the first person is still there. And so this is permanent housing.
Yes.
And then, but is there any obligation among these people? Obviously, to live according to some kind of rule of law and community.
Yes.
But what else is expected of them?
Yeah. There's rules. It's kind of like a homeowners association on steroids. I mean, there'd be some rules in there that you wouldn't normally have in a homeowners set of rules, like don't put your hands on staff or each other and these kind of things. But so yeah, there's. I just lost my train of thought.
Yeah. So what skin in the game do they have?
Skin in the game. Yeah. So they do pay rent. They do pay rent. And now it'd be a low barrier rent, but they do.
And where are they getting that money if they're homeless?
So either by working, or most of them because they do have disabilities.
Yeah.
So a chronically homeless person would be an unaccompanied male or female that's been living on the street for at least 12 months with a definable disability. So
yeah.
You know, they would have either physical or mental disability, and most of them would qualify for some kind of benefit to help them pay for rent. Also, we want to have dignified work opportunities in the village for them to be able to earn and pay their own. And we believe that that's part of regaining dignity. You know, self-esteem comes from, you know, earning your own keep and paying your own bills.
Yeah.
And when you just tell someone to sit down and you have no cards in the game whatsoever, that doesn't do anything to help restore their dignity. We
yes.
feel like that they do have to have, as you say, skin in the game.
So there's going to have to be a lot of construction of homes and infrastructure and obviously a lot that's going to go into this. This will all be through fundraising, or where is the money going to come?
Well, initially we've got, you know, we do have a good bit of land and we could use some of that for, you know, phase one construction. So the initial push of funding, we've got some resources as an organization to be able to do that because of our benefactor donated this prime real estate. So we'll be able to come out, I think, with a great traction there because of the funding that we already have. But ongoing, Community First has to raise money every year. They operate at a deficit. So they have to have donors come in every year, and we're going to need the same thing, and we'd like to start that now. What I'd really like to do is challenge the business community to come forward. You know, in the village, we're going to need a grocery store, a hair care center, a library, and a little convenience store, and different, you know, all these different facilities. As I see it, as a business owner, I want to challenge the business community to come forward and be part of the solution. We know that homelessness is a community-wide issue, and it's going to take community-wide involvement to solve that issue. And so I know that, you know, as a business owner, I see the problem on the street, and I realize something needs to be done about it. If I can take some of my resources and contribute to something like this, which I have personally, and be able to help individuals transform their lives and therefore transform the local community at the same time, it's going to make my world better as a business owner mm-hmm. in that community.
Yeah, so you'd like to see some of these businesses that will invest in this project, put their stores in, maybe even hire some of these people? Would some of them be possibly?
Yeah, I'd love to see. Like, if we had a grocery store operator, we're going to need a small grocery store for folks to shop at. We're going to have a big pond on site, and I'd love to have a catch and release pond for And we want to draw in the local community, you know, the families in the surrounding community. If you look at Community First, they have a movie theater and they show movies every Friday night. And they have two property lines where they have traditional single family homes in adjacent properties. They come and watch movies every Friday night with them and do other things. So we want to do that same thing, you know, challenge the local community to get involved with us. And so, yeah, I think business owners could do that. Start a small concept. If you're, let's say you're a grocery store operator, start a small concept and, you know, commit to personnel that would go through specialty training and that kind of thing for, to be able to deal with a troubled population.
Yeah, quite a project, and it's very ambitious, like I said at the beginning, and quite exciting that it's really still at the embryonic stage. And so as we close out, just another minute or minute and a half remaining, Pete Moggins, President, CEO, Founder, Community Forever Village, communityforever.org. Those listening right now, what do you need? How do they get a hold of you? And what are the next action steps? What
are you looking for? Well, communityforever.org, if you'll go to our site, you can donate right on our site if you'd like to give financially. And we need funding right now. We got to pay for engineers and consultants and architects and all the rest of it in order to get through with the zoning change. They can contact us directly through, there's a button on there for volunteering, and you know that would come directly to us, and we will contact you to see how you can get involved. If you're a business owner and you want to talk about the possibilities of how you could either contribute or get involved with a collaborative venture of some sort, I'd love to talk to you personally. You can contact us through the website, and I'll reach out myself to do that.
All right. I know we still left a lot to be discussed, and hopefully it won't be another year before we have an update with you. Maybe we can do another one here in a few months at the beginning of the year and talk about where it's going. Communityforever.org is the website. And again, Pete Moggins is president, CEO, and founders. And of course, pray for them. This is really going to be a big blessing to many people in the homeless community. I think most of us have no idea what it's like to live, even one night under a bridge. I certainly don't. Well, thanks, Pete. Appreciate it. Also, Gretchen, your wonderful wife, for her support of this project as well as a board member. This has been the interview of the week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. If you have ideas for future interviews, let me know. You can just email me directly, DavePalmer@grnonline.com. God bless you. Thanks for listening.
Holy Cross Catholic Church in the Colony invites all listeners to its annual Christmas Bazaar. The Christmas Bazaar will take place on Saturday, December 6th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and on Sunday, December 7th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Browse a variety of handmade crafts, vendor booths, and festive seasonal treats. All proceeds support the final phase of the parish remodeling project. Celebrate the joy of the season and shop for a great cause at the Holy Cross Christmas Bazaar.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this edition of the North Texas Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. I'm Dave Palmer, Executive Director here. Cecil Anderson, who has a new title that I can't quite remember. She used to be the North Texas Assistant, and now she's doing big things for the network with graphics and also helping me with our 9, 10 a.m. station. So she is running the board now, and we're very grateful for her. And, you know, my mom, I must say, Dottie Brady, is a wonderful lady, and she is involved in a lot of different groups at different parishes. She gets around a lot, and a couple of her friends are here in studio with me to tell a really fascinating story about divine mercy, about the rosary, about prayer. And I think this is a story that's really going to edify you. And Joan Sedge and Emily Corbelly are here from St. Mark the Evangelist Parish in Plano, the home of the wonderful Father Jason Cargo. And they are members of a Divine Mercy Cenacle. And so I want to, first of all, most of the story is going to be about Emily, because she has a fascinating story that I think will really inspire many of you. But let me bring Joan in first, because Joan's the one that contacted me first and said, you need to interview Emily. So
yes.
Thanks for being here, Joan. Good to see you.
Well, thank you, Dave. Yes. So Emily and I belong to the Divine Mercy Cenacle at St. Mark's. And actually, we've belonged to it for about 3 years now. Mm-hmm. And just recently, the director looked up one day at one of the weekly gatherings and said, Emily's going to share her testimony today.
Mm.
And I thought, well, okay, I'd heard a little bit about it, but not really the whole thing. And oh my goodness, I was blown away. there were so many things that I think spoke to so many of us ladies there. And I just sort of blurted out, I said, wow, Dave Palmer should hear about this. And then I didn't think anything of it.
And I'm so grateful that that was, and I know, Elizabeth, Muzika was there as well. And I'm just glad that my name came up in conversation when it came to relating and telling great stories.
Right. Just kidding. And then Elizabeth came up to me afterwards and she says, no, I'm serious, Joan. Contact Dave and y'all get this, you know. I said, okay, sure. Here we go.
And here we are. So, Emily Corbelly is, my guest. And thank you again, Joan, for, being here as well. And Emily, we got a lot. I mean, your story probably we could tell in 2-3 hours, but we're going to condense this into about 20 minutes. So, I think for the sake of the story, it's okay to say you're elderly and you have a long life experience, a lot of twists and turns in your life. But let's go back to the beginning. And where did you grow up and what was your faith life like? Were you a cradle Catholic?
No, I wasn't a cradle Catholic. Well, I was baptized Catholic.
Yeah.
My mother was a convert and she saw that I did my Holy Communion and confirmation as a Catholic.
Yeah.
I went to a Catholic university, Marquette, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I grew up. And my dad was an alcoholic. I was an only child. And that's about it. I started figure skating at a young age. I started really training at the age of 13. And all through my life, I've done figure skating. I taught for 60 years.
60 years.
60
into,
years.
I think, your 80s, you were still,
yes.
I mean, which is phenomenal to think about.
Yeah.
And, but you know, the figure skating, I know, you know, most of us know it from the Olympics. It's a highly competitive, probably a lot of pressure. And that's one of the things that got you into a little bit of trouble early
yes,
on, right?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, I thought I was a little heavy to be skating. So I asked my mother, I said, is there something I can take to lose weight? And be my mother, she found out and I got prescription that pep me up.
Mm-hmm.
And for years I was on it and eventually got addicted to it. It was speed. And I was taking 9 of those pills a day.
Mm.
And I was up all night long.
Yeah, because it gave you that rush.
It
right?
did.
Yeah.
It really did. And I didn't realize until after I had children that things were kind of messed up. I mean, I took care of him and I loved him, but during the night, I'd get up and start to clean.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought, this isn't working too good. And then I started to drink. I started to cut down on the speed, but I started to drink. And I became an alcoholic. And I was a closet alcoholic.
Yeah.
And it was so much energy that I spent in hiding it. And worrying about my husband finding out. My kids knew.
How many kids do you have?
3.
3 kids. Okay,
yeah.
So you're raising kids, still doing the ice skating, training,
right.
teaching, and going from speed to alcohol. But you know, there was always some kind of dependency, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
To,
something
yeah, secretive,
that got me in the mood or, you know,
yeah.
and things. So then I must have been in my 50s. I started alcoholism in about 1970-something.
Okay. And that's, in your 30s or so.
Yes,
and can
exactly.
Can I ask you, because I know part of your story is that you really came back after, like, decades, like 60 years
60
away.
Years.
Was, you know, it sounds like, you know, you were confirmed and you were baptized as a child. And was there a moment in your life when you lost your faith or did that happen
I
at a particular time?
I didn't lose my faith.
Okay.
I just didn't practice it.
Yeah,
let's put
right,
it that way.
Right.
Practice it.
And your husband wasn't practicing either, right?
No, he was a baptized Catholic.
Yeah.
But his father decided that it was no longer for him. So
yeah.
they got out of the church when my husband was 8 years old. And when he asked me to marry him, he says, I'm not getting married in a Catholic church. Well, at that time, it didn't mean that much. I was in college. And I said, well, it's okay. But since then, I can remember that when I said it's okay not to get married in a Catholic church, I remember something, a wave coming over me. And it really brought me down, dark.
Yeah.
And then it went away. And I got married and had the three kids, and he traveled a lot.
So you were functioning, you were carrying on life, but living a little bit of a secret life. And
it seemed every time I turned around, I was doing a secret. Trying to keep, the kids knew I was drinking.
Yeah.
And, but they never said anything to their dad because I think they were afraid that we would split up or something.
And really there was no, you know, at least organized faith in your life. There was no going to church. Was there an emptiness in this life?
Well, we went to another denomination. Yeah. And I started teaching Sunday school and all this stuff because I wanted the kids to have a unity with some kind of religion. But all the time, I would walk 5 miles a day. And during that time, I would say decades of the rosary.
Ah.
And I kept that up for a long time. And then something brought me back to the church in about 2017. I was reading the Fatima story. And all of a sudden, it was the third time I had read it. And I was at the end of it. And all of a sudden, another wave came over me. It's just like a wave, somebody pouring water over you, mm-hmm. that said to me, you need to start saying the rosary every day.
Yeah, yeah. Which was, of course, was her message to the children, right?
Right?
Pray the rosary every day.
Right.
So that, and it's interesting, if I may just go back a tiny bit, Emily. The you weren't practicing the Catholic faith. You're practicing a different religion, and even teaching, you know, CCD. But it sounds like the Catholic faith was always still kind of in you. You still had that interest in the rosary. You're praying the rosary. You're reading the Fatima story. So it's like you can take the girl out of the church, but you can't take the church out of the girl.
Exactly.
Can you?
So
2017, read the Fatima story for the third time, and you became convicted to pray the rosary every day, right?
Yes.
And you've done that really basically ever since.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And it grows in you. It just things happen to you that you know is caused by something else, mm-hmm. not just you, but it's just a wonderful thing. In fact, when I go past Catholic schools, my heart drops because I wish my kids were brought up Catholic.
Yeah.
They do not know what they miss.
Yeah.
And now you talk about confession and that, and they don't understand that. And it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful that you wish they would know it, and maybe I'm praying that they will.
Yeah, which I think leads in very well to divine mercy, because, you know, we can't beat ourselves up about things we did in the past,
right.
And God is always willing to extend his mercy. And so how did, obviously you're going to the Divine Mercy Cenacle, but how did divine mercy play a part in your story?
It was 2017 that I came across one of the priests at St. Mark's. And I said, how do I get back in the church? And he said, well, you got to give it confession. But before that, my husband was diagnosed with stage 4 esophageal cancer. And so I thought, well, he's going to die. And I used to pray that he wouldn't suffer.
Mm-hmm.
I knew he was going to die. I knew that in my heart. But and so I thought, what can I do that's extra? Well, I walked in the church one day and I saw the pamphlet for Divine Mercy. My husband had already died, and I thought, I got to do something. And I saw that it takes care of people that are dying,
mm-hmm.
that when you say dying, you will go to heaven. And so I kept trying to learn the Divine Mercy.
Chaplet.
Yeah. And so I read in the bulletin that they're going to start a chaplet. So there was another step towards Divine Mercy and, uh-huh. and helping my husband heal his sins.
Yeah.
And it was just, I was so excited that I went home at night and learned it before I even went to a meeting. And I started the meeting and I thought, boy, this is it. This is for me. All the luggage that I carried started to explode. And to do a confession for 60 years is not exactly...
You might have been in there for a while.
But I got to tell you, I felt like I lost all my weight. It was a marvel.
Which is ironic, because that's what got you into trouble in the first place, is trying to lose weight.
Right.
But this is spiritual weight that you were carrying with you. And, you know, and Joan, I want to kind of bring you in because, you know, you talked about the, how fabulous the story was that you heard, of course, you know, and I want to make sure that I get the highlights that were most poignant for you. And so you feel free to jump in. And if there are parts of the story, because I didn't get to hear the full presentation. Yeah. So, and I know we want to talk about prayer. I know they want to talk to people about not living in regret, and God's always going to extend mercy. But anything else in the story that really stood out to you?
Well, I just think that she found so much fulfillment in coming back to the church, in the rosary, in the Divine Mercy Chaplet, in sharing it with the ladies at the cynicle. And it's just made her more complete. And I think it's just brought her great joy is what I see. She's a lot of fun to be with. So that's all I would, that's what I would have to say.
Yeah, that's what my kids say. I said, why do you want to be around me? You know, they said, Mom, because you're crazy.
In a good way, right?
In a good way.
Yeah. Was it nerve-wracking to tell your story? Because I know there's a lot of details we didn't get into.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like, everybody's story is a little messy.
Right.
And was it difficult to kind of let that out?
Surprisingly, no.
Okay.
I didn't plan it. It just happened.
Yeah.
We were on a subject at our meeting, and I came out with the fact that I was addicted to speed.
Mm-hmm.
And I announced that. Then I belonged to a prayer group. And that I came out there about the alcoholism because we were on that subject. And I'll tell you, it just came out.
Mm-hmm.
Something wanted me to mention it and tell that part of my life. And you know, when you, and I want to say this, because no matter how old you are, and no matter if you're in bed sick or standing up or then, the thing that you can do that's going to help you more than anything in this world is to pray.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pray, and it doesn't cost you anything. And it's so important this day and age.
Yeah.
That you have to pray. You don't get anywhere without prayer.
Right, because it's kind of like the Martha and Mary from Scripture, is that
Absolutely.
People, we think that we need to do stuff. We need to get out there and be active.
Yeah.
Whereas the Mary was the prayer person,
yeah.
And sometimes we don't find that to be as effective because we don't always see immediately the results.
Right.
So what have been the fruits of prayer in your life?
Oh, my. Getting through my childhood, for one thing, because my father, I was deathly afraid of my father because he drank and he went off on binges. And he would come home and be mean. And I can remember one time I was in college, and he didn't like the boy I was going with, so he had my mother come down to the Marquette University and bring me home. And while I was upstairs in the bedroom, he was slicing salami, and he says, I'm going to kill that kid.
Mm.
And he started running up the steps, so I jumped out of the second floor bedroom window. So, you know, and I forgive my dad. I love him, but I was afraid of him.
Yeah.
And God helped me through that. He really did. Through skating.
Yeah. Yeah. So. You have so many life experiences. You know, sometimes we look at a person and if I just walked by you in the mall, I would just say, oh, what a sweet lady. I bet you she's had such a great life.
And,
but I think that's the beauty of it. And that's what ties into the divine mercy,
yes,
is that we all have a past. We all made mistakes. And we can either dwell on it and feel guilty,
or else
we can say, God, I accept the mercy that you
have. Well, I went through high school and all that trying to hide my home life. So it wasn't something that wasn't inborn in me that kids didn't know I came from an alcoholic family.
Yeah.
And I didn't want them to know. So, you know, I was never able to bring my kids home because my mother, you know, I didn't know if my dad was going to come home drunk or not. So,
mm-hmm,
you know, it's a story of my life. But I tell you, I had God. I didn't know it at that time, but God was with me. He's walking behind me every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Mary has something to do with it in there, too.
Yeah. Talk about the Blessed Mother. Obviously, praying the rosary every day.
Oh, yeah. Blessed
Mother. What role does she have in all this?
She's always working in the background. She's always pushing me in the right road. She pushes me in the right road. You know, I could.
Oh, she doesn't push you on the road, you know, because that can be dangerous.
Yeah. But I've always felt that she's there.
Yeah. What about the people listening right now? And I think that probably most of us who, like, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda. You know, I wish I had done this. I wish I had sent my kids to Catholic school.
Yeah, you could have wished it. I could have, would have. But the thing of it is, it's gone. That time is gone. So you got to go on the road, a new road.
Yeah.
And pursue it. And fortunately, and I don't know why, and I'm sure it's God and all the holy angels and Mother Mary that kept me on the road. Because once I never took a drink after I went to that anonymous meeting. And I went there for 90 days every day at noon, and I never drank since then.
Mm-hmm.
And then the speed, I didn't. I'll tell you this. When I always had to take something that pep me up.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this thing that I found at in the vitamin store, and it kept me up. And as I'm going along in this, having it since 2017, I thought, I got to find out if this love for God is true. So I need to give this pepped up pill I was taking and decide whether my love for God is real or it's because I'm taking some kind of pep thing.
Yeah.
And so I did that. And I gave it up for Lent. And I got to tell you, I sweated. And I was so scared. So after 3 days, I went back on the thing. And then I said, Emily, you gotta stop this. You gotta find out. And ever since I decided I gave it up for Lent again.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. Ever since then, I've stopped taking anything that would stimulate you.
Yeah. Just want to let everybody know, this is the interview of the week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. My guest is Emily Corbelli. She is from the Divine Mercy Cenacle at St. Mark the Evangelist Parish in Plano, along with Joan Sedge. They're friends, and Joan had heard Emily's testimony as part of the Cenacle and said, oh my goodness, you got to get on the radio and do the interview. And here we are. I want to touch on something else, Emily, that we haven't talked about a whole lot, but it's got to be a part of your story, and that is forgiveness. Whether it's you forgiving someone or else maybe your kids or somebody in your life forgiving you for your life. What would you say about that topic?
Well, it was me trying to forgive myself because I thought, oh, there's no way because there's more to this story than you realize than I've told you. But I couldn't forgive myself for a long time. And it's just recently. It's not one of these things that just happened, but recently I love God, and more important than that, God loves me.
Yeah.
And so it's a realization. I'm growing every day.
Mm-hmm.
I try to go to church every day and receive the Eucharist, and every day my heart gets bigger.
Yeah.
Expands. So there again, if you go to pray and practice, miracles happen.
Yeah. I've done so many interviews with women and men who suffer from like a past abortion, and then sometimes it'll be decades before they come to grips with the fact that God will forgive them.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the hardest part, is you may forgive yourself, but then don't realize that God is very eager to forgive.
Yeah.
And that's the divine mercy
message.
It
took a long time.
Yeah.
It took a long time.
Yeah.
And it's through the divine mercy and through the prayer groups.
Mm-hmm.
And just going to church, even if you stop in for 5 minutes, it makes you want to be better, do things better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're just down to a last few minutes, and Joan, if you want to jump in at all as well, but beautiful story. And I asked you this before we started about whether you're interested in giving your testimony to any other groups, because I know there's women's groups and parish groups that are always looking for good stories. Is that something that you would do? Do you travel?
I would do it.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to at a time, but I found out I could do it. I mean, I'm not afraid of the microphone.
Yeah.
And
this kind of
if often, it helps one person, I think it's worth it.
Yeah. And you spent so much of your life in athletics and dance. I mean, figure skating. Yeah. What advice would you have for parents who see a talent in their child and say,
I'd say pursue it. Yeah. If they especially love it. My grandmother used to take me to ice shows. Mm-hmm. And I kept telling my mother, I want to do it. And she finally, at about 13, she called. You had to join figure skating clubs in those days. And it just grew. It's something that was in me.
Did it help a lot of your character formation the discipline to become excellent at something like figure skating?
Well, it worked. It made me handle the stuff at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that all three of my kids are in sports. And I find out, even with kids I've taught, that if they're involved with something, they're likely to be on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe firmly if a child likes to play the piano or play tennis or whatever, pursue it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. There's so much to the story, and I know we hit on a lot of the highlights. I think, obviously, the Rosary, Divine Mercy Chaplet, prayer was something you really wanted to highlight as well. Any closing remarks or anything that we didn't mention that you would like to leave with our listeners who, you know, might be going through their own issues or what else? Anything else that we
didn't
talk about?
There's one thing that my husband and I both strayed. And the only reason why we were together for 58 years is we never mentioned it to one another.
Mm-hmm.
That we were, it was like it never happened.
Yeah.
And, not mentioning it.
Yeah.
If you're going to do something, do it on the right way. Don't bring up stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That also, that plays into the whole forgiveness thing that we talked about as well.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Emily, for having, being vulnerable enough to tell the story, especially some of the more challenging parts of your story that you talked about. Emily Corbelly, again, is my guest. And Joan, thank you.
Sure.
And I, anything you want to say about the Divine Mercy Syndical? Is this something that is common at a lot of parishes, or is it unique to St. Mark's?
No, it's in quite a few parishes. And thanks to Dr. Brian Thatcher, who has the little, we call it the Divine Mercy Syndical, little book. And what's beautiful about it is that when we meet, he brings in a portion of the Diary of St. Faustina, some scriptures, and part of the catechism. And so it's a great overview, and it's just little bite-sized pieces. And so there's a lot of time for sharing within the group. And then we conclude with the Divine Mercy Chaplet. And then after that, usually a lot of the ladies go to the 12:15 Mass. Yeah. It was just a beautiful time.
Yeah. Yeah. I know my mom has been blessed by it as well. So we're going to have to leave it at that. But thank you, Emily.
Oh,
thank you, Joan,
sure,
for being here. And
thanks,
Cecil, for running the board. And thank you for listening, everybody. And if you have suggestions for this, if it ever pops up like Dave Palmer ought to tell this story, well, get a hold of me.
Thanks for listening to KATH 910 AM Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth, and North Texas on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Catholic radio for your soul. Heard also at grnonline.com and on your smartphone.
Of believing that I didn't need God.